It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me at 93% always is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Joe Pakovitz is back.
Hello, hey, hello.
It's been a little while.
Howdy.
It's actually been a little while since we've had a third person in the room.
Yes.
Because like, even last week, we're like, really? We're just talking to each other again?
It's just me again, John.
Yeah. Or it's a Skype call where it's like, it's me staring at the screen.
Yeah. Well, at least there's a person on it.
Yeah. That'll be the worst podcast ever. This is me pretending there's another person in the room.
This is me watching, you know, Tim Bruce Batman.
Yeah, I'm making commentary.
While making commentary.
For myself.
Something you can't see.
That was my first podcast. It was exactly that. So this week, there were a couple of announcements, and they were all about rated R movies. As we know, Deadpool is still the biggest R-rated movie moneymaker ever released. The biggest X-Men movie ever released. So all of a sudden, we've had all of these announcements about new rated R comic book movies. Wolverine 3 is now going to be rated R. Batman vs. Superman is going to have a rated R Blu-ray. Sony has just announced that they're going to make a Venom movie.
Presumably in reaction to...
to Deadpool.
Who do we have rights to that's kind of like Deadpool?
That's very, very violent.
Yeah.
And they said it's not going to be tied into Marvel Studios, so I don't know how this thing's going to work. But I really wouldn't be surprised if they're saying, not rated R. Marvel Studios came out and said, no, we're not making rated R movies because we make $1 billion with every movie doing them the way we're doing them.
Yeah.
But Marvel Studios makes Daredevil and Jessica Jones, which would be rated R if they were movies.
Right.
So they have this... so it's been interesting to me how we've now created a new genre with Deadpool, which is not, it's not brand new because we can go into the rated R comic book movies that have been made in the past. But Deadpool's opened the doors and created a whole new type of superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what does that mean? Is that good? Is that a bad idea?
No, it's stupid. And it's stupid because we said before, Deadpool works as like a rated R comedy movie, whatever. You know, I expect this kind of stupidity from like Sony, who has the rights to Spider-Man and can't figure out what the fuck they're doing. So it's like, well, let's make Venom because, you know, we couldn't make it a year ago when we fucked up Spider-Man or 2 years ago when we fucked up Spider-Man. But because Deadpool did it well, it's like, well, I guess we could do it. It's like... if a studio needs the permission of somebody else to figure out how to figure shit out, they're fucking stupid.
Yeah.
You know, Marvel's constantly been making, from Iron Man to Age of Ultron or Ant-Man or whatever the last one was, they're just kind of doing their own thing. It's always PG-13. They know the type of movie they're making. They hire directors they like. They cast people that they've seen in other movies that they like. They're not trying to chase... they're not trying to, like, chase what the... the goal should be, they're setting the goal.
Yeah, they're setting this. Well, they're setting a trend, and everyone else is chasing that trend, which is why even within Disney, Star Wars is going, yeah, we're going to make a movie every year, but they're not going to be direct sequels because that's what Marvel does.
And they don't need to be. And, you know, Marvel's got like a loose continuity of the movies all vaguely tying to each other, but you don't really need to see any one of the other ones to know what's going on. You know, it's like a comic book. You can pick up any issue of the comic book. You're going to be a little lost for a while, but then it's like, that's the point is more of, look at this giant spectacle. And then, like, with Fox, it's like, all right, well, you made a couple good X-Men movies, but you made more bad ones than good ones. Finally figured out what to do with Deadpool after a complete... I mean, this is the same studio that gave us, like... Wolverine Origins Deadpool, which
is a low point for all of Fox's license of Marvel.
Yeah, and it's
the worst X-Men movie as well as a bad start for Deadpool.
Yes, and it's as far off the mark for Deadpool as the new Deadpool was on.
So the problem really isn't, I think, the R rating. The problem is the studios not knowing how to make a decent movie of any kind of rating, because if this was Marvel Studios that we're talking about, and Marvel Studios came out and said, we're going to turn this particular franchise into, you know, we're going to make a movie that's it's rated R, I would not have a problem with that.
Like if they said we're going to do Moon Knight, right, it's going right. to be rated
because
R.
Because they're so good at picking the, matching the genre with the title.
Yeah.
And we talked about this before, how each one of their films finds a different niche. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy was your Errol Flynn, semi-humorous swashbuckler, you know, Tony Stark's your hard sci-fi, Thor's your mythology, that kind of thing. So I would trust Marvel Studios to do it.
Yeah,
but these other studios clearly don't know what they're doing in any kind of movie, so they're just going to make a stupid R-rated movie despite anything that's character-related. They're going to take characters that shouldn't be in R-rated movies and make them R-rated.
And it's a it's clearly a response to Deadpool, because no one was having these conversations 6 months ago. Sony wasn't sitting around saying, oh, we should make an R-rated Spider-Man movie. It's like they weren't having that conversation. So this is clearly like a knee-jerk reaction for them thinking, oh, Deadpool must work because it's an R-rated superhero movie. And it's like, no, you guys are dumbasses. They've made R-rated superhero movies for 20 years. All three Blade movies were R-rated. The Crow was R-rated. Like
yeah, Swamp Tank Girl. Thing. Yeah, Wes Craven, Swamp Thing.
Yeah, Tank Girl was R-rated. Girl. And it's like some of those...
Sin City.
Yeah. And it's like some of those were good, some of them were bad, but it's like... It's they're not trying to squeeze something that doesn't fit the R rating into an R rating. Yeah. You know, like you said, you know, the Punisher movies were all R rated. Or maybe, were they PG-13, that first one with Thomas Jane?
No, I think that was also R.
That was R,
Warzone
too.
Was definitely R.
Yeah, Warzone I know
and
for
the,
sure was.
Way back, the Dolph Lundgren one was R.
Fuck that Dolph Lundgren one. But it's like, it's the same thing. It's like, we're like 6 months away from Fox being like, we're going to try Fantastic Four again, and it's going to be R-rated. And it's like...
Which makes no sense.
Right, and it's like, this is how stupid these idiots who are sitting around in suits are, because they don't know what the fuck... They don't know what to how to make a movie. Marvel's given them, what, 13 or 14 examples on how to make a good superhero movie?
Yeah, remember when Avengers came out and everyone was said, well, that's done now. Like, we know how to make these now, and there's never going to be any bad comic book movies. It's like when Obama got elected and we went, there's no more racism in America.
Yeah.
And now we're more racist than ever.
Ever been. Yeah. And it's,
well, but comic books have always been follow the leader like that. You know, there's always been trends in comic books
right.
where something pops up as a success and all of a sudden it spawns 14 different imitators. And that's fine. I mean, plus all the whole evolution of comic books. Remember, comic books up until Stan Lee starts writing them are really, you know, at least the superhero comic books outside of like, you know, detective comic books or the horror comic books. Those were written for 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you start getting the college kids, you know, who grew up and were and grew up as fans of these books in the late 60s, early 70s, start writing them for people their own age, for college kids.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get these, you know, stoner space operas. And I'm just wondering what people, you know, like adults back then who were opening up the brand new 1972 issue of Avengers and found out that this is not for 8-year-olds anymore, mm-hmm. thought about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the people that opened Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and Speedy's a junkie.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. I remember in the 80s, I was about, I guess, 12 or 13 when Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen came out, which then spawned Vertigo, and being really kind of shaken by like these basically R-rated comics. Watchmen was another R-rated movie, yeah. definitely an R-rated comic. In
yeah.
fact, I think they pulled their punches in the movie compared to the book.
Yeah.
There was this reaction of like, oh my God, why are you even doing this in a comic book?
Yeah.
But then you got used to it, and then there was Vertigo. And then there, and you know, and then Image followed suit with Walking Dead and some of their more adult things. So there is that sense that it's scary at first and then you get used to it.
Yeah.
But comics do kind of have this rating system. They try to implement a rating system.
Well, the comics code, you know, for a long time before they finally ditched the comics code. Mm-hmm. You know, when all of a sudden you had this whole universe of alternate comics and the black and white revolution in the late 70s, early 80s that... Talk about R-rated. I mean, they were doing things that would be R-rated today. American Flag, for example. You can't give that to an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Well, the Comics Code was less of a rating system and more of like a noise gate where it was like everything up to this level is okay and anything else. It was an on-off switch.
Yeah.
You either got the code or you didn't get the code.
Yeah.
And it's a famous story of when Stan Lee wanted to do an anti-drug message and he had Harry Osborn addicted to drugs, and he didn't even say what they were. It was just Harry Osborn just kept eating pills.
I don't think Stan Lee knows what drugs are.
No. Now he does, because they're keeping him alive.
Yeah. But, different kind of drugs.
But yeah, it was just, he was taking pills and going, I can fly like a bird on a roof. But the Comics Code wouldn't publish it. And those issues of Spider-Man don't have a Comics Code on them because he said drugs. So they had this on-off switch of like, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. And then around 2000, then they had, once these adult comics came out, Vertigo, the best example, they had a mature audience's stamp of that was the first thing. It was like parental advisory on CDs.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, hey, just kind of a warning. It wasn't a legal thing where it wasn't like you were not allowed to buy this comic, or it was not allowed to technically exist where the Comic Code was, but it was just kind of a warning label of like, this is going to be intense. And then I remember,
like when TV does, you know, viewer discretion advised.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They can't stop you from watching. Yeah. But they covered their asses.
Exactly.
That's what they say in front of every episode of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
By the way, someone will be chewed alive in the next hour.
Somebody might get their head chopped off. Yeah.
Their face ripped off.
Yeah. If you don't want to see that, that's really all we're doing on the show.
Well, it's like, in the same way where it's like, you know, the mainstream comics started in the 90s not really knowing how to capture the audience that had left to go read indie books. So, like, they're like, all right, let's kill Superman. You know, let's get more extreme with the X-Men. It's like everything got that harder edge to it.
And also, let's create things like Vertigo. And let's hire the people that are doing those indie comics to come over here.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, you know, X-Men did really well in the 90s. So then everyone started to try to make, like, X-Men type characters. There was Wolverine type characters on all the teams. Everyone started wearing jackets, and like the explosion of 90s nonsense in all the other books because it worked well on Deadpool or on X-Men is kind of what's happening with the Deadpool movie.
Well, that's what Image was when it started.
Totally.
Image was the artist that had been working on X-Men and Spider-Man drawing their own X-Men and Spider-Man knockoffs.
Yeah.
Which is why Wildcats and Youngblood and Spawn were ultra popular in the 90s and are now considered relics of the 90s.
Right.
Because they weren't really doing anything
new. And I think
that's
kind of what's happening in the movies, is these idiots who run movie studio companies, these producers, saw the numbers Deadpool did and they're like, oh, okay, it's R-rated. Okay, we got it. That's easy. We can figure this out. And then now they're going to try to make whatever property they have similar to it R-rated, thinking they can piggyback on the success. And Does anyone think we need an R-rated Superman movie?
No.
Like,
no.
What?
That was my problem with Man of Steel, was it was too hard PG-13.
Yeah. And it's like, it's unnecessary. You know, something like Suicide Squad, you know, they're holding it at PG-13. Good job, guys.
They announced that today.
Yeah.
Again, I feel like we're just walking into this hurricane that's going to be Batman vs. Superman, which it will be out in 2 or 3 weeks. We're all going to see it because we do this freaking podcast every week.
Yeah.
But I keep feeling like every decision they make is bad, where it's like, it would make sense if they said Suicide Squad was going to be R.
Yes.
Because it's starring Deadshot and a Joker with tattoos and
murdering half the team are killers.
Killers. Yeah. And it ends dark. Yeah. And that one is PG-13. The one where Batman meets Superman
is
going to have an alternate R rating.
I just feel like it's deja vu all over again, because in the somewhere around 1987, all of a sudden all these heroes that, you know, we've had an evolution, the squeaky clean DC heroes who then couldn't hold their weight against Stan Lee's conflicted Marvel heroes. You know, Stan Lee brought that new level of complexity in. And then somewhere around 1987, all heroes had to become outright anti-heroes.
Yeah.
Because of the reaction of the Punisher.
Well, yeah, and Dark Knight Returns.
Dwayne McDuffie had a great quote, and he said, you know, when guys like the Punisher and all this stuff and kind of rose to prominence in like the 80s, Ghost Rider and all these other idiots or whatever, it was the only way you can tell who the hero was is whose name was on the book.
Right.
Because they'd be like, oh, this guy's like a guard. I'm going to kill this guy. You know, he's in the way. And it's like, that guy's just doing his job. You know, it's like you murdered a dude who's got a family to break into the bad guy's house, but fuck that guy.
Yeah, I remember Chuck Dixon was on the show and we talked about Punisher because he wrote a lot of Punisher.
Yeah.
And he said the Punisher is the villain in his own book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like, that's a great example. You know, it's like they're doing the Daredevil show. First season did really well. They used the Kingpin. Daredevil's like number one villain. Great. Second season, who do you use? Well, we don't want to do Bullseye yet, so we're going to use the Punisher as a villain because he's a the guy. He's not a good guy. This is a guy that they've done comics books where the Avengers are like, all right, Punisher's out of control. We got to go get the Punisher.
Yeah, like Spider-Man, for example.
He starts as a Spider-Man villain.
Yeah. Right, and it's I get the idea of making him, I think why he's more interesting than, you know, Tombstone or whoever, is there's, it's not just, oh, I'm a bad guy. It's like, well, you can kind of see his point of view. He's going too far, you know, but his family was murdered and the killers escaped justice. This guy's going for what he sees as justice. And he's, you know, a lunatic because he's like, he's just as crazy as Batman, but he's murdering everybody.
Yeah, but he's killing people. He's what Batman was at the very beginning in the 1930s, where Batman was going around shooting people.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone forgets, like, Batman used to have machine guns on the plane. Fucking plane and carry a gun.
There's a great, that Bruce Timm tribute to, like, the origin of Batman. That they did during Batman 75.
Black and white. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a tribute to the Bob Kane. They show that scene and they show him with the machine guns on the plane. And there's a quick shot where there's a box in the cockpit that says rubber bullets.
Oh, is there? I thought, because I had watched that recently, I thought he put like, it's like tear gas bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or something where it's like he loads like a canister and says like tear gas and he shoots the bullets and all the smoke. And it's like, yeah, no, it was a machine gun back in the day. Like, Batman was running around murdering people.
Yeah.
Because he was the ripoff of the Shadow. And it's like, Batman's the comic book version of the Shadow. What does the Shadow do? He hides in the shadows, comes out with guns, and murders a bunch of guys. Well,
and that's the problem I have to Batman this day. For some reason in the movies, the Batmobile always has guns on it.
Always.
Always. Yeah. You know, in the Tim Burton Batman, he takes a plane and shoots missiles at the Joker.
And misses.
And machine guns totally misses because Joker's standing between the two guns. But he does that, you know, in Batman Begins, he's got missiles that blow up a subway.
Yeah.
There's a video going around now of Ben Affleck on the Warner Brothers lot and that he's driving the new Batmobile and like surprises tour groups. And it's cute. And you can tell he really likes being Batman. But at one point, he's like talking to the people. He's like, hey, look, this is a Batmobile. And he goes, you see the machine guns on the front? I'm like, okay, number one problem.
Yeah.
Again, you put machine guns on the front because what do you do with guns? It's like they always figure out like the Tim Burton movie, like shot around a door and drove it through the door.
Yeah.
You know,
which is insane that Tim Burton was like, all right, we're going to put machine guns on the Batmobile, but he's only going to shoot it to open up a door. Cut to Batman Returns. Oh, you're a clown? Here, take this bomb, and I'm going to blow you up in the sewer.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, he can't shoot the guy with machine guns, but he can dynamite him in a fucking sewer, and that's fine.
Well, it's that line he says in Batman Begins.
I hate clowns.
Where he's like, Dan Slott was talking about this on John Suntress's podcast, about it. He's like, I won't kill you, but I don't have to save you. And Dan Slott's like, he fucking kills him.
He kills him, yeah.
Because he gets off the subway at the last possible second.
Well, not only that, the only reason the fucking train crashes is because Batman blows the train up. So it's like, that's like Batman being like, I'm going to trap you on this subway car. Then I'm going to blow up the car and I'm going to leave. I'm not killing you. The explosion from the subway car crashing is killing you. And it's like, bullshit. Fuck you.
That was amazing about Dark Knight, because I think it was the first Batman movie I saw where the villains didn't die.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think. Batman and Robin, I don't like to think about, but does Mr. Freeze doesn't die? Does Poison Ivy die?
No, they both.
Because I know
jail.
Joker dies. Joker falls off the church.
Everyone
dies.
Falls off. And dies.
Penguin
falls through the roof of the thing and dies.
Falls through the roof and then like falls in. The penguins take him into the water.
Yeah.
Two-Face dies. Two-Face falls
the,
and the Riddler's
lottery grave.
Riddler's given a lobotomy. And then Batman and Robin, I remember...
Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy go to jail.
They both go to jail? Okay. But I remember Dark Knight and when Joker's hanging upside down.
Yeah.
And they make a big deal of, like, you and I are going to do this till the end of time. I remember seeing it the first time going, oh, they're actually not going to kill a Batman villain.
I was really surprised.
It's part of the Hollywood formula of, like...
You kill him, yeah.
I think it's because of that Terminator ending. It's like, if you don't kill him, well, they keep coming back, and they keep coming back, and that's the only way to have a definitive ending. I mean, most of the Spider-Man movies... are like that, you know.
Yeah,
Green Goblin dies the way he dies in the comic. Dr. Octopus drowns.
Yeah.
And then, what is it, Venom blows up. Sandman gets blown into the
wind. No, he leaves. They let Sandman go, but Venom and Green Goblin 2 get killed.
But it's kind of like a death scene. It almost looks like he just loses cohesion. He doesn't turn into sand and fly away. He's like,
I thought he
looks all sad.
Sand and flies away.
I thought he just broke up into sand.
Stupid either way. And then they kill the lizard. The lizard gets killed. And
those are killed. They killed Electro too, didn't they?
I think everybody gets killed.
See, yeah, they kill people left and right, but they do it in a PG-13 way. Now they can.
That's the difference between Avengers movie violence, and it's big and it's cartoony, and then there's the Daredevil, South Korean gangster film level of violence, or limbs are being Sin City, or even Deadpool, or you're running people through and stuff like that.
Let's be clear too: there's nothing wrong with R-rated superhero movies if it fits. The character.
Yeah, we've named a few that are really good. Dread was really good.
Right, and it's like you shouldn't make a PG Dread movie. It doesn't make sense.
It would be lame.
It's like you don't tone down the Punisher. That should be R-rated. He can show up in Spider-Man comics, and he works, I think, in the Marvel Universe. But ultimately, if the Punisher has his own monthly book, it should be R-rated. It shouldn't be a book that kids are buying.
Like the Garth Ennis version.
Exactly. That's why they have the Max titles. Yeah. Yes. And they put Daredevil under that banner for a while. And it's, Daredevil's probably one of the more fluid characters that can go between R and PG-13, depending on what run it is or who's writing it. Bendis and Maliv's run was very violent. Mark Waid's is very fun. It's like, it's two different takes on a character that both work.
Well, that's a great point because I've been thinking about, let's talk about a character who I think is appropriate for R but has been living in a PG-13 universe, is this third Wolverine movie.
Yeah.
You have a guy who has knives in his hands who I think a couple of times he runs into a guy's chest in those films. The Wolverine we had problems with, and we covered it when it was out, because they pulled so far back on the violence. And I've said it on this podcast before. If you want to see a good version of the Wolverine, there is one. Watch that unrated director's cut.
Yeah.
Because he just starts chopping up ninjas. You still get the wacky robot at the end and too many mutants. But the fight scenes with the ninjas are not pulled so far back that the story got emptied from the lack of violence in that. Now they're saying Old Man Logan is going to be an R-rated movie. With Hugh Jackman, who is a character who has played this character in 7 movies as PG-13.
Yeah. I with this particularly, it's like Old Man Logan had a parental advisory warning on it when it was coming out. Like, that trade has the parental advisory.
Even though it was part of the Wolverine series. It wasn't its own
limited series. Right, it wasn't its own
series.
Run. It was just a goofy story Millar wrote during the middle of Wolverine's run. And that's a movie where it's like, you want to make, it's the same thing. You want to make an R-rated Wolverine movie? Go for it. Go for it. Absolutely good idea. It's, don't do Wolverine and the X-Men R-rated, because the X-Men shouldn't be running around murdering people. Wolverine, essentially, people forget, he's not like a superhero. He's a lunatic. He's a crazy person who goes into berserker rages. The only reason he's on the X-Men is so he doesn't go fucking team up with Magneto.
Right.
The only reason he was ever on the team was so they could keep a fucking eye on him. It wasn't like he's some good hero dude. He was a lunatic.
Right, and that was the original idea for the Wolverine limited series that Frank Miller did. And then the series, when it started, was like, when Wolverine doesn't have the X-Men to watch out for him, things get dark, and these were supposed to be darker, more mature stories. The problem with Wolverine was he was so popular, and then the X-Men took over the Marvel Universe in the mid-90s, that Wolverine just became another X-Men book, and he's like fighting cyborgs and traveling through time
and like I said, it's
teaming up with Apocalypse.
It's fine to get him, I think, with him particularly because he's so popular. Deadpool to some extent, too. They put Deadpool on the Avengers. They'll put Deadpool on an X-Force team or whatever. They'll put him on these teams where you kind of tone the character down and he can play with the other characters. Wolverine's one of those characters that works on the teams. It's cool to have him on the X-Men. But if you're doing a solo Wolverine story, you can kind of get away with doing an R rating. I don't really have a problem with that. Even like Venom to some extent. They want to make the R-rated Venom movie? Go for it. The problem is they should have done, have the intelligence and the balls to do that on your own instead of waiting for another studio to stumble ass backwards into doing it. Let's remember, Fox, or is it Fox that has X-Men, right?
Yeah, it's Fox.
Fox wasn't going to make the Deadpool movie. They had to leak the footage for fans to get all jazzed up about it to finally make it. So it's like, it's not like they championed this movie and they went balls to the wall and really took a risk. They like did it in the stupidest, shittiest way possible.
And cheapest.
And yep. cheapest.
Don't forget, they kept cutting that budget down.
Yeah.
You don't see it on screen, but
yeah, and
that movie cost about a third of what Days of Future Past cost, yeah.
Yeah, and give credit to the director and, you know, whoever, the production team. Ryan Reynolds especially coming off of Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, yeah.
Right. Now, I was reading an article.
I'd say Green Lantern cost at least twice what Deadpool cost.
Oh, I would say three or four times as much because the visual effects were beyond stupid for that movie. And I read an article.
Yeah, his costume is a CG effect in every single shot.
Yeah, and how expensive is that? And it's... I read a good article that was saying, look, Ryan Reynolds already played Deadpool in a Wolverine movie and it was terrible. And the studios gave him a second chance and he nailed it. At this point, DC should just recast him as Green Lantern and just move the franchise forward. Make a good Green Lantern movie. Now give him a second chance to be Hal.
Yeah, and they're
being, let him do what he's supposed to do. And
DC has been noncommittal about having Hal in it. They changed the Green Lantern. Originally in the plan, there was a Green Lantern reboot movie. It was coming last, so it was way far away from Ryan Reynolds, so nobody would put it together. And then they changed that movie to Green Lantern Corps, which, you know, everyone's thinking, well, now it's probably going to be about Jon Stewart or Guy Gardner and avoid Hal. But you're right. If Ryan Reynolds has now proven himself bankable with Deadpool.
Right. Like, why wouldn't they just to hedge their bets? And it's the, like I said, it all kind of boils down to this, you know, you'd think by now it's a formula. You plug in the numbers, you make the movie, you cash your check. They haven't figured out how to make a superhero movie yet, unless they're doing something original or they have a good concept. They have no clue what they're doing. Because I'd say there's more bad superhero movies than there are good superhero movies.
Well, the DC crew, they can't figure out how to make a Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
They have a Flash property that is just ripping it up on TV,
right?
Yet they won't give Grant Gustafson the movie, which is 18 shades of stupid.
Right.
You know, what makes us think that they can do a decent job of matching that?
Yeah, that's the thing. They haven't had a home run, so they're trying to like hit every ball in every direction at the same time. They're trying to have this unified track and be Marvel, but they're also trying to throw everything at the wall at the same time and see what sticks.
Yeah. And I mean, what we were hearing that the early reviews of Batman and Superman is like not great, and the studio's worried about it, and they're saying they might scrap all these other projects.
There's a rumor on Bleeding Cool, and Bleeding Cool is a rumor site, so sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But they said the early screenings, and no audience has seen Batman vs. Superman yet. They've just shown it.
Yeah, even that poor kid with cancer, they wouldn't let him see
it. Yeah, they wouldn't let him see it. Like, which again, you know, J.J. Abrams let the cancer kid see Star Wars.
And it's like, you cannot pretend your shitty Batman Superman movie is going to be a bigger deal or more spoilery than fucking Star Wars was.
Yeah, maybe they didn't want to ruin this kid's last day.
Maybe, yeah.
They were like, you know what? Your cancer's not going to get any better seeing this movie.
It's like you'll be happier knowing what you think it could have been and been disappointed by what it actually is.
The rumor is now that they don't like it. They don't think it's going to do that well. They think Suicide Squad's going to be fine, but Suicide Squad is their Deadpool.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they didn't spend as much on it. It's got the Joker in it, but... So that's as big as they get, because Harley is not known outside of comic circles.
But I think after this movie, they're writing that character. Harley Quinn's pretty much DC's Deadpool right now. That's the way they're
writing
her.
She's a female Deadpool.
Yeah. Right, and I think they'll play that up in the movie.
And it seems like Margot Robbie's doing a good job. She hasn't particularly impressed me in anything I've seen her in. But,
I don't know if I've seen her in anything.
She's in Wolf of Wall Street.
Is she the wife?
She's a second wife. Yeah.
Huh.
The first wife is Kristen Milioti, who's the mother in How I Met Your Mother. She's the blonde second wife. She's been in a bunch of different things, but she's never really popped. But in the trailer, she seems decent.
Like I said, that second trailer with the Bohemian Rhapsody was like dead on. Good. It was like...
Yeah, but apparently DC's backup plan, and again, this is a rumor, is that Batman vs. Superman starts to tank. They're going to scrap this whole plan. they're supposed to put Justice League into production next month, but that is the month after the release of Batman vs Superman.
They're waiting to see what happens.
So that week, if it doesn't do that well, they could pull the plug. I think Wonder Woman's either being made. They showed some footage in a special.
Yeah, I think it is being filmed.
I think it is being filmed, unless those were all clips within Batman vs Superman. So that will come out. But then they said the plan is to just scrap everything and make a Ben Affleck Batman movie fighting Jared Leto as the Joker, because they're liking Ben Affleck as Batman. They think that's working.
Yeah. It's just like I said, it's something where it's you'd think it wouldn't be this hard to make a fucking Batman versus Superman
you've
movie.
You've got at least 50 years worth of stories to choose from.
Yeah.
Some, you know, not every story is a fantastic great run.
Right, but I think there's 75 years of DC Comics. So Batman and Superman are 75-year-old characters. You're telling me there isn't 2.5 hours of 75 years of comic books published monthly, more than monthly, because most of those characters have multiple titles, and they can't figure out how to make a 2.5-hour movie starring Superman and Batman?
Problem with Superman is there hasn't been a decent Superman movie since the 70s. Since
Christopher
and
it's Reeve.
Like, since the first Christopher Reeve. The other three Christopher Reeve movies are bad.
Ah, the Superman 2's awesome.
No, Superman 2 is good in nostalgia. When you go back and watch
it. I have. I like it.
If you watch Superman 1 and 2 as a marathon back to back, you see how shitty 2 is compared to 1. Because they fired Richard Donner halfway through it.
Yeah.
They brought on Richard Lester, who made Beatles movies that were good, which did not qualify him to make Superman.
Yeah.
And then started changing the plot. The funniest thing about Superman 2, which I did not notice until I watched the extra on the DVD, is when they fired Richard Donner, Gene Hackman refused to come back. So they used whatever footage Richard Donner had shot with him.
Yeah.
And then there is a lot of shots of the back of someone's head or him far in the background and a guy doing a Gene Hackman impression. The best scene in Superman 2, when I was a kid, the best scene in Superman 2 was him fighting General Zod and Lursa in the street, which now when you watch it, there's a lot of wires pulling buses.
Yeah, it was good for the day.
Superman 1 is good for today. Superman 2 was good for 1981, which I believe is shot on the same street as the beginning of The Great Muppet Caper.
Right.
But in Superman 2, the shot where they're trying to find the Fortress of Solitude and they're on a dog sled. Luthor and Ned Beatty and Miss Tessmacher are trying to find. There's a shot of three people on a dog sled from very far away, and a guy going, "Well, if we find Superman's Fortress of Solitude, we can find him come tonight." That is the level that Superman 2 is matching.
Yeah,
and then from there it's downhill.
Yeah,
let's put Richard Pryor in it and hurt Richard Pryor's career with it.
Yeah, and it's like I said, there's definitely more bad Superman movies than good Superman movies, but they're just looking to remake something else when it's the same problem with DC Comics as a company.
It's always been the problem with DC Comics as a company.
Right, and it's Marvel's pretty much, they get away from it. We talked about this a couple weeks ago on the podcast where they get away from the characters and they kind of end up coming back. But it's even something with Dan Slott on Spider-Man right now, it's what makes Peter Parker work? And there's all these different things that make him work as a character, as Spider-Man or whatever. And all they did was say, well, he's usually really poor. What would it look like if he was really rich? And they kind of flip it on its head for a while. We all know he's going to lose Parker Industries. The company's going to go bankrupt and he'll go back to being a poor schmuck. We know that's going to come. Just like we knew Superior Spider-Man was going to end. But it's with DC, they're constantly just we don't know what makes any of our own characters work for more than 6 months, so just reboot everything.
Marvel moves forwards with their reboots.
Yeah.
DC just reinvents the wheel.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
And I think that's a huge mistake, and it's something you see the studios doing now where it's we're going to try Superman, Batman, we're going to put a guy that, we think people like, but we're not really sure in charge of it because we couldn't get Christopher Nolan and we're going to hope for the best. And then when it blows up in their faces, they're like, just hit reset. And it's how many times can you reboot it before people are just going to be what?
DC is the Burger King of comic books.
And,
even though they were there first, I had a friend in advertising who was working on Burger King for a while and found out that Burger King does no market research in where to put a Burger King. What Burger King does is find out where there's a McDonald's and finds out where there's an empty lot next to the McDonald's.
Yeah.
They spend their entire business
following McDonald's.
Following McDonald's shadow. And like, you know, they try to differentiate themselves by having different menu items and by being flame broiled.
Putting seeds on their buns.
Yeah. But they're always like, but they're comfortable being number two. There is no one at Burger King that right now is like, we're going to beat McDonald's.
Yeah.
And DC's always been that way. When you look at creatively the comics, the times they peaked the hardest is when they hired Marvel talent.
Right.
Because yeah. Denny O'Neill yep. and Neil Adams were working at Marvel before they came over and yeah. did great things. George Perez was big at Marvel before he came to DC.
Yeah,
John Byrne was the biggest yep. star at Marvel.
Frank Miller.
Went to DC. Frank Miller was a huge star at Marvel. And other than the Batman movies... And the Batman animated series.
And to some extent, their TV properties, I would say. Like, especially recently, they've had... I mean, they've had success with, like, Smallville. They had success with Wonder Woman in the 70s.
But that's the...
People love The Flash. People seem to really like Supergirl.
But it's the same yeah. It's the same basic production team for their TV, though, right? Because there's...
For some of it, Greg Berlanti is the big guy right. who... I believe he came from Smallville, but he's running Flash and Arrow and Supergirl.
Right.
The other ones, like Gotham, are a completely different thing. iZombie's a completely different thing. It's again that problem. Constantine, which is gone, was a completely different thing. They had him on Arrow, but it wasn't part of the same production company. And again, it's that DC scattershot approach... Where, you know, you can't have a Gotham Arrow crossover.
Yeah.
And as you said, you can't have The Flash on TV in the Justice League movie.
Yeah.
And it's the same to some extent, you know, it's like if you look at DC's originally publishing lines, all those characters were all in different cities that were made up. Mm-hmm. They were all kind of in their own universes. They had to do special crossovers to get like the JSA to meet the Superman or whoever.
Well, just the idea of World's Finest teaming Superman and Batman up. Was revolutionary for them. And then Justice League having guys that were in their own books instead of just a bunch of original characters.
Right.
Like the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Was huge for them.
And then Marvel's like, well, all right, let's, you know, make a new superheroes. And where do they set them all? They all are in New York City. They all team up. They all can meet each other.
They're all written by the same guy.
All written by the same guy.
So when Stan Lee had writer's block... He was just like, I'll pull a guy from over here and put him over here. Spider-Man 5, Spider-Man fights Dr. Doom. Because yeah. I'm guessing Stan Lee didn't have a good Spider-Man idea
yeah.
yet.
Yeah.
You know, like Electro was like issue 9. He didn't come up with Electro. So yeah. he's like, oh, that guy in the Fantastic Four works. So a lot of that was because it was all coming down on Stan.
And I think that is something that has kind of carried through the history of both the two companies in TV and movies and everything is, you know... Ever since Marvel in the 60s started making comics, DC's been playing catch up.
Yeah.
And they've, and to some extent with the movies, you know, it's like DC had a fucking 50-year lead on Marvel in making movies because they were owned by a fucking company that made movies.
They had a 25-year lead on making comics.
Yeah. Yep. And they still are playing catch up. It's like, and it's just beyond belief to see that, you know, it's like we've said it before on the show, Joe Quesada had that joke about Superman where it's like having the rights of Superman and not making that one of the best-selling books in the industry is like having the biggest dick in porn and not being able to get an erection.
Right.
And it's like these guys have, they had everything working for them for decades and decades and they still are playing fucking catch up to the new kid on the block.
The way DC works, and I'm personally biased because of my preferences, but DC as a company has been Batman and a bunch of other guys.
Yeah.
Like Batman gets all the preferential treatment because Batman sells really well. So there have been 8 Batman movies and like 6 Superman movies, 1 Green Lantern movie, nobody else.
Yeah.
You know, there are 10 Batman books and like 3 Superman books.
Yeah.
Superman, I think I've said this before, you know, this podcast is 3.5 years. I probably said things before.
Yeah.
Superman is the Mickey Mouse of DC where, you know, Disney... They put Mickey Mouse's head as their logo. Mickey Mouse is on everything. They don't fucking make Mickey Mouse movies.
Yeah.
No. Every now and then, they'll make a Mickey Mouse TV show for little kids on, like, Disney Junior. Nobody watches it.
Yeah.
It's their corporate masthead. They know there's a history and a legacy there, but there's nothing
Yeah, he hasn't been relevant for decades.
But the trademark's worth billions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same as Superman. They don't know what the fuck they're doing, but you see, Superman S is... worth billions.
But look at Disney just focusing on Disney's characters, like not even talking about Marvel or Pixar or Star Wars.
Yeah.
You see more stuff with Goofy or Donald Duck, like over the decades. There was Goofy movies. There was DuckTales that were hits.
Yeah.
They didn't even try that with Mickey Mouse. And they do the same thing with DC. DC was Batman, which was a huge hit. Superman, so-so. Let's go back to Batman. Right. And then Justice League, just everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so there's it's always, when DC wants to do something, it's always Batman. Batman's doing really well. What else can we do? Superman. Okay, that didn't do as well. So what do we do? Everybody else.
Yeah.
And their three biggest brands right now are Batman, Harley, which is fucking Batman.
Yeah.
And Justice League,
which
has Batman.
And everybody. Yeah. So it's Batman plus everybody, which is why Batman versus Superman, the ugly secret Warner Brothers doesn't want us to say is this is not Dark Knight 4. This is not the beginning of the DC universe. This is the fucking sequel to Man of Steel, which is a fucking sequel to Green Lantern.
Yeah. And Man it's of built Steel on made this less mud. Money than Superman Returns.
Right.
And it's like, and they still, and that's, I guess the ultimate problem is like, they could have made a Justice League movie as early as like, the mid-90s, I think they were talking about.
They almost made one in 2008, but the writer's strike.
That was another one. That's what I'm saying. There's been like
George Miller, who did Mad Max.
Yeah.
Mad Max Fury Road, was right about to start shooting, and the writer's strike killed it. Like, he looked at the script, and he's like, the script needs more work. I can't start shooting it. And they were like, there's a writer's strike. You're not shooting.
Yeah.
And it just went away. And that was right after Dark Knight, so it would have come out before Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Well, it's a shame that they got to play catch-up, and they have to play follow leader, because why? Why would you go see a movie if Marvel's already made that same movie and better?
Yeah.
I think the one place that where if they wanted to grow a pair of balls and actually go somewhere that Marvel hasn't gone would be Wonder Woman, because Marvel hasn't made a female superhero movie yet.
Yeah. You know, they tried it with Catwoman, a Batman character, and it didn't work.
Well, Catwoman was a mess because Catwoman sat around for so long. That was supposed to be Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, yeah.
And it was supposed to come out before Batman Forever, because Michelle Pfeiffer was a huge hit in Batman Returns. And then it just sat around and sat around and sat. And I think like Sandra Bullock was going to make it and Ashley Judd was going to make it.
And the fact that they fucking by the time made it when they did, it's like,
it was 10 years later. Yeah. It was Halle Berry. It had no connection to Batman at all. And it was a first-time director who never made another movie after it. It's terrible. You know what? Catwoman is the one DVD I don't own. I bought Gotham Season 1.
Yeah, but you don't have Catwoman.
I have the 1940s serials. Birds
of Prey.
I have Beware the Batman on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I have Birds of Prey. I have everything. I don't own Catwoman.
It's technically a hole in the collection, John.
Nope, because there's no connection to Batman in it at all. You know what? Gotham has Bruce Wayne in it.
Right. And I think, you know, that's like I said, it's ultimately the problem is like going back to the R-rated, it's not a bad idea. It's not a terrible idea to make R-rated super movies.
And I would see an R-rated Batman movie.
Right.
They're talking about The Killing Joke, the animated film.
Yeah.
And the animated movies have been great. They said, look, if we come back with an R rating, we're going to put it out as is. We're not making an R rated cartoon, but they let us know that they can. And that's a book where, okay, you can go there. The video games, Arkham Knight is the only one with a mature rating because they had a scene in it, and I'm going to keep it spoiler free, but there's a couple of scenes in it that are really disturbing.
Yeah.
Mostly because they're adaptations of The Killing Joke.
Right.
Yeah. But they didn't want to cut it, and they said, all right, well, this one will be mature, and the games have sold really well, and honestly, they're too hard for kids.
Yeah.
You know, Ben will pick up the controller and just try to fight guys, and he doesn't have the skills to do it.
Right.
But you can get away with that, and it's like,
yeah, that's the thing, is this, like, it's not so much the discussion about whether or not all superhero movies should be R-rated, or should they even be making them. Yeah, just like they should be making any R-rated movies, because it's a genre, but it's the fact that they don't know what they're doing, and it's all reactionary instead of actually trying to figure out how to make a successful superhero movie. Like Joe was saying, who's going to be the first one to make a female lead superhero movie and do it right? And it's like,
it's going to be Marvel. No, yeah. Wait, unless, well, Wonder Woman, they're shooting now.
But that's what I'm saying.
But are they going to do that right? I don't trust
them. And are they going to do it before the Captain Marvel movie?
And yeah. I think Captain Marvel's been pushed back far enough because of whatever's been worked out with Spider-Man. That we will get Wonder Woman first if... fucking who knows? If Superman Batman bombs or gets bad reviews, they'll just shit can the Wonder Woman movie, and then Captain Marvel will be the first.
And the thing about Wonder Woman has even more of the problem with Superman, because Wonder Woman's not that great a character. Wonder Woman doesn't have... Her origin is kind of weird and based in mythology, and there's a lot of... the creator was into S&M and built a lie detector, and there's that element. But the thing is, she's not that compelling on her own. She doesn't sell that well. But the thing is, every single woman loves Wonder Woman.
Well, and you just came off probably the best Wonder Woman run in 20 years with the Azzarello run. Yeah. He showed how you can freaking do that right, because she is a combination of the mythology of Thor and kind of the patriotism angle of Captain America, and she's a woman.
And I think I kind of disagree. I mean, not with that, but with that she's not a good character. It's any character, if they've been around this long, they have something that works, that staying power. And forget the S&M bullshit. She definitely has goofy origins, and there's a lot of bondage in those comics in the originals. But that could be how many like a war on Olympus and Titan movies.
Yeah.
They're making mythology movies every year. The Rock did one.
That Egypt one just bombed.
That Egyptian one just
bombed. Full of white people.
Right. And it's they keep making these movies that are tied in mythology. Thor, it's like, here's your chance to make they haven't really done Thor really well. And
now both those movies,
they make money, but they're nowhere near what...
There's something about those Thor movies where they're entertaining when you see them the first time, and then you don't want to watch them again. Because I bought the Blu-rays of both of them. I don't know that I've ever watched it all the way through.
Well, yeah. Both movies work best when he's on Earth.
Yeah.
And he has something to play off of. When he goes back to Asgard, it's things like just drag.
Yeah, they kind of drag. Haven't figured out how to make a good or a great Thor movie. Because like I said, they make money. I'll go see everyone they do. I'll rewatch them at the shop.
They say Hulk's going to be in that third one, I think, just to support it.
To help it out. And that's fine. But it's like with Wonder Woman, it's like they really do have a chance to make a big, epic, mythological Lord of the Rings type superhero movie.
And they can focus on the same thing Azzarello did. The Olympus gods as a dysfunctional family. Because that's what they really are in the original mythology. They are a very dysfunctional family.
Yeah, it's like Zeus is just putting his penis in everything, and everyone's like, don't do that, Zeus, you're an asshole.
Right, and you have these behind-the-scenes power struggles, and that's what Azzarello did really, really well. And that's what they could focus on in the movie if they really wanted to and make a compelling Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to come down to Earth.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, even if they do want to tie it in and do her origin, there's a way, I think, to keep all that mythological stuff, do the origin, set it in modern times, like do the whole thing. It's just like, it just blows my mind that it's like, well, Superman Wonder Woman's probably gonna be, or Superman Batman's probably gonna be a mess. They'll either shit can Wonder Woman, or they'll force it out, and it'll be just derivative, and it'll be dumb. And
or they'll try to bring in the romantic angle with Steve Trevor, and it won't work.
Yeah.
Well, then here's a question to bring it back full circle. Should Wonder Woman be rated R?
And it's...
No.
Yeah, I would say no, because it's something where, it's unnecessary to the character. It's...
But it can be really violent. Like, totally. She's used swords and shields, and you have armies in it.
It's usually the cartoony Avengers type of violence. It's not the Daredevil slice you and have guts piling out violence.
Yeah, because I think, if you watch Lord of the Rings... Hundreds of thousands of people get murdered in those movies. They're epic, huge war movies. They're all rated PG-13, every one of them.
Yeah, but they all had to be cut to be PG-13. And the extended versions of all of those are unrated for that reason.
And that's the exact same thing I would say.
It's things that go right over the line, like beheadings.
Right, but if you're beheading a monster, I think it's a little bit different than beheading
a human. Or a robot.
Or a robot. And I think you could do a Wonder Woman movie that's PG-13. You don't have to cater this rated R. It's like, it's unnecessary to the character. Superman shouldn't be rated R. Batman can be rated R because his villains are... psychopathic murderers.
Yeah.
It's like same thing with Wonder Woman. It's like, make it PG-13 so kids who are going to want to see a Wonder Woman movie can still see it without having to worry about Wonder Woman sticking swords through everybody.
Right.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
My greatest thing is the movie The Last Man on the Moon, which I saw at the Gene Siskel Film Center the other week. It's a documentary. It's a documentary about astronaut Gene Cernan, who so far has literally been the last man on the moon.
Yeah, I think I heard about this.
The Apollo 17 mission in the early 1970s. Fantastic movie because it's not this usual heroic hagiography of the astronauts. It shows the human side, and it shows the sacrifices that he made. Heavy interviews with his ex-wife. So talking about the fact that he wasn't around for his family as much as he would have wanted to be. I mean, he's still loving
it. Because he's on the moon.
He's on the freaking moon. That's right.
Why aren't you home for dinner? Because I'm on the moon.
I'm on damn moon.
In my mind, this movie is in a Sanford and Son episode. Yeah. Why don't you come back on the moon? Bring the ugly with you. Ralph Sanford. How dare you go to the moon? Go to the moon because the man in the moon ain't as ugly as you. Come on, Pop. Come back from the moon, man. We're going to come back with nothing. That's my movie.
And that's why he doesn't write...
but that's why you're not a screenplay writer.
Fuck you off. Sanford and Moon. I'm
Sanford
pitching it
and
now.
Moon, that's right. DC will buy that. But anyway, it's really good film because it goes into several different aspects of this that whole time period of these guys. You know, normally we think of these guys as, you know, they drink 3 whiskey sours and hop in their Corvette and then just fly to the launch pad
like
and
the
go
right
to the
stuff.
Moon. And there is obviously a little bit of that because that was part of their lifestyle. I mean, if you're going to be taking these guys are all, you know, former Navy, you know, test pilots and shit like that. So that kind of personality trait is like the work hard, play hard, you know, like the, you know, these guys were what the movie Top Gun wanted pilots to be,
yeah,
you know, back in the day. And, you know, there obviously was also a human cost. You know, there were the 3 astronauts who lost their lives in a test run for the first Apollo mission. So they got to go into that. And again, the sacrifices, you know, when you all live in the same neighborhood and you have to go next door and tell the wife that her husband and her kids that the husband ain't coming back anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just something that, you know, how would you do that? And you kind of put yourself in that seat and you're like, holy shit, yeah, that was pretty tough. But then you have the glory of walking on the moon and doing something that only 12 people in history have ever done. Yeah. So, you know, the stakes are pretty high there as well.
That's crazy.
That's awesome. That sounds like a perfect thing that would show up on Netflix in like 6 months, and I would totally watch that. You saw it at the Siskel Center, right?
Saw it at the Siskel Center. I've also pre-ordered the Blu-ray.
So, oh, awesome. I can borrow it.
So you can borrow it.
Steven can't.
No.
You're a bad borrower.
I mean well.
I actually really enjoyed Gotham this week. And I never say that.
You hate watch that show.
I've been hate watching that show for like a season and a half. And my quote about it now is a few months ago I was watching it. And Ben won't watch it usually. And he walks in. It's a little too old for him because it's very violent. But we're both Batman fans. He walks in. He's like, and I'm like, I just have this scowl on my face. And he's like, what are you watching? I'm like, Gotham. He's like, why are you watching it? And I go, because it's almost Batman. And this week, they came back from a break. They took a break and the X-Files took its place, which I really enjoyed. The X-Files had its ups and downs. We did a whole show about when it came back. Mm-hmm. One episode was brilliant. 2 episodes were pretty good. 2 episodes were terrible. Last episode was not that good. And it was such a cliffhanger that they're obviously going to bring it back. But now that it's off, Gotham has come back, and they're doing Mr. Freeze. And Mr. Freeze is one of my favorite characters. I got the snow globe.
Yeah, awesome. Snow globe.
Yeah, which is a 14 years old DC Direct made, and I found it for retail. But it was actually done really well. They stuck fairly close to the Paul Dini origin, mm-hmm. where Victor Freeze is a scientist who's trying to create cryogenics, and his wife is getting sicker and sicker. So he's trying to create the cryogenics to preserve her life. So we're not as far along as we are. But he's got a freeze gun.
Yeah.
And he's testing. He's just kind of kidnapping people and freezing them and then seeing if he can bring them back, and they all like just die. So he's got like a basement full of frozen corpses. And it was actually done fairly well. They were like good twist to it. It wasn't that over the top operatic that it usually gets to with like Fish Mooney.
Yeah.
There was a subplot where now Penguin is in Arkham Asylum because he was arrested at the end before they took the break. And they brought in BD Wong as Hugo Strange, and he was really good.
Hmm.
And they're kind of building the subplot that like something really weird is going on in Arkham and the doctors are in it, and but nobody knows what it is. And I'm interested in it. It's not, as I said, it's not that over the top stupidness that they always tend to fall for. And I'm like, yeah, this is what the show is. This is what I signed up for. And my problem with Gotham is that it's so schizophrenic. It does things I like, and then it like just pisses all over them. Like, and it made me realize, yeah, there were episodes I really liked. There was a two-parter with Scarecrow in the first season that was really good. There was a two-parter with Firefly where she was a girl that was like, couldn't get out of the mob, that I really liked. And I'd say I probably liked 8 episodes out of the 34 that they've made, but I like those, and it gives me the hope, and it's going to make me watch Gotham for another year. If Gotham turns right back into shit next week.
Right, they've got you for the rest of the
because
season.
Because who knows when that Mr. Freeze episode come up, and it's almost Batman. Mm-hmm. So I'm not recommending that we all go back to Gotham now.
Right.
But that one was good. When it comes on Netflix, you could watch the Mr. Freeze one.
Yeah. This week, I don't have anything except that I've repeatedly... We lost Netflix at the store because Dave isn't paying for Netflix, I guess. So we've been back to Blu-rays for a while, and I just keep rewatching Army of Darkness. And it's
that's
like,
fantastic because you actually never saw it before until, we did the podcast.
Yeah, and I haven't seen any of the show, which I'm gonna check out as soon as that's like.
Show is incredible.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about it.
They also just announced, not to interrupt, but they just announced for season 2. Lee Majors is playing Bruce Campbell's father.
Dad,
yeah. I think you were telling me that, which I think is awesome.
That's going to be great.
It's like Kurt Russell playing Star-Lord's
dad. They announced it the same week. And I was both of them, like Kurt Russell is Star-Lord's dad, Lee Majors is Ash's dad. I was like, both of those are incredible.
But I think I like, it's like, it's a nice, it's a great movie, but it's great just to see like a director and a writer and an actor making a movie that's batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And has like
in a good way.
Yeah, in the best way possible. It has like the effects are cool and some of them are stupid and like here's a dumb skeleton and it's like but it's just like it's made with like such joy.
Yeah.
That it's like it's refreshing. It's like they don't I don't really know a lot of things that are made like that anymore that are made purely for the creator's enjoyment.
There's not a lot of fun.
Yeah, and know. It's like, well, it's like everything I think takes herself too seriously.
I think there is, but you have to remember when that came out. That was like a tiny little budget picture that kind of came and went. And I think those still happen, but they're hard to find.
I think,
and at the time, Army of Darkness was hard to find. But it's been 20 years of the cult growing.
Yeah,
that like because it came out in like 92 or 93. There weren't a lot of movies like it then.
Yeah,
but you know, I just happened to catch it when it came out. It is batshit crazy because it's like just the premise of it. It's the third sequel to a horror movie, but it's not a horror movie.
Yeah.
It's like an action adventure movie that takes place in the Middle Ages with no budget for it. No. And it's a Three Stooges movie.
Yeah. Well,
and the hero is unlikable and stupid.
Yeah. He's a moron. And it's just interesting. Like, you know, like you said, it's like very much like the first Army of Darkness or the first Ash vs.
Evil Dead,
is the cabin in the woods type. The family goes to the woods in their cabin and they get attacked. And then the next movie, they're like, give him a chainsaw for a hand, fucking send him back in time and have him fight demons and an evil version of himself.
Well, that's why Evil Dead 2 tends to be people's favorite of all of them because it's a remake of the first one in a way, but it's also the batshit crazy of Army of Darkness.
Yeah. Because
the second one is the one where he cuts his own hand off and it crawls around and flips him off and then he puts the chainsaw on and... Yeah, you know, and then his brother's is a big fat zombie flying around.
Yeah.
That tends to be people's favorite. I love them all, but Army of Darkness is very special in my heart. And like I said, man, I just want the Blu-ray of Ash versus Evil Dead. Not a lot of people get stars. Yeah. Nobody stepped up to stream it. I want to watch it again.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's just like I said, it's like you said, it's harder to find that stuff, but I think it's something where it's like, that's kind of like the spirit of what they shoot, you know, going back to like what we were talking about with like R-rated movies or whatever. It's like, you know, just try to make something you would want to watch instead of trying to chase the thing you think people want to watch.
Yeah. I think that's what Deadpool is.
Yeah.
I think Deadpool definitely has that spirit.
Yeah, where it's just like, if you listen to interviews with Ryan Reynolds or ever hear him talk about it, he gets that character, he likes that character, he pushed for that movie, he probably leaked the fucking footage that got the movie made in the first place.
I think it was on The Tonight Show, he goes, I am 70% sure I wasn't the one that leaked that footage.
Yeah.
Which means he totally did.
And that's fine, and it's something where it's just like, you know, it's like, it's... That's the real, and I think James Gunn, the guy who did Guardians of the Galaxy, did a quote, because I had mentioned at the store, and then one of the guys was like, hey, that's the exact same thing he said. And that they're missing the point of Deadpool. It's not that it's rated R, it's that it's an original concept for a movie that harkens to exactly what that character is ultimately about.
And usually when you get that kind of story, it doesn't have the kind of major play backing, so it comes and it goes. It's like lightning in a bottle.
Right.
And they can't get it. You know, the Evil Dead franchise is one of the very few that actually gained enough traction to become a franchise.
Yeah, although it was like 5 years between one and two, another five years after three, then like 20 years, a reboot, and then 4 years after that.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you had to wait for those things. It wasn't like Nightmare on Elm Street, where it was every year for a while. Right.
And how much of that is the labor of love of the creative team behind it? And I think that's ultimately what makes this stuff successful. You know, Rob Liefeld's is fuck off. You know, he didn't care about it. He was just trying to rip off, you know, Deathstroke to make Deadpool. It's the creators like Joe Kelly and all these other guys that came in and
worked. Ed McGuinness Fabian.
Ed McGuinness Fabian. These guys who came in and worked on Deadpool afterwards and brought all the things you think are original to Deadpool and made it work, you know? And I think that's why stuff like Army of Darkness works. This is like the driving creative force behind it is guys who are just like, yeah, let's just fucking go nuts, guys. Let's do it. Just like, sure, he's back in time and, you know, have him fight skeletons and drive his car around with like a fucking spinning death thing on it. It's like,
I think it's at least in my top 10 movies of all time, if not my top 5.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this has been so much fun. Thank you guys for coming on. Joe, how do we follow you?
I am Zen Master Guy on Twitter.
You can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter and follow the Facebook page for all of our news and announcements and new podcasts. Oh, by the way, I was on another podcast this week, totally unrelated to comic books. Yeah, I may have mentioned it in passing every now and then, but I'm in a U2 tribute band. And if you've seen pictures of me on the website, you know exactly which member I look like. But we were on Windy City Irish Radio this week. So if you want to hear me talk about U2 and music and playing in a band, and we performed 3 songs live in the studio, you can go directly to WindyCityIrishRadio.com, and we're the February 2nd episode. We're on the whole show. It's a radio show, so there will be commercials and other music playing, but it was really, really fun, and it was a cool thing to do. And actually, I would have been a lot more nervous if I hadn't been doing this podcast for so long.
3 years.
Because I went to a radio studio and I saw their big board and everything, and I'm like, oh, we don't have any of that. And they put the same damn microphone in front of me that I'm speaking into right now. And I'm like, I know how to do this.
I've got one of those.
The one thing I had to worry about on the show was that it wasn't my show. I was like, you know what? You really should wait for them to ask you a question before you just start talking. But yeah, you can give a listen to that. It was a really fun thing to do. And Steven?
I'm always at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!